This is the Fascination Waltz by Joseph C. Smith's Orchestra.
Fascinating. Were people still doing waltzes as late as 1917?
Yes.
I figured people would have moved on to like a faster paced form of dance by now.
Yeah. Now, part of me feels like, oh, I know this song. This is a great song. Part of me also feels like maybe that's because every waltz sounds alike.
Let me see. Do I know this?
Yeah, da, dun. Yeah, dun. Oh, yeah, dun. Da, 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 da.
It's like the kind of music that's playing in a room before Rodney Dangerfield walks in and really livens yes. things off.
Yes, this is like the sleepwalking music as someone is like causing all sorts of vast destruction while unaware of it.
The other one like that, but it's always the you know, being played at every fancy restaurant.
Yes, with little fountains going and a harpist.
Yeah, you know Rodney's coming in. He's coming and fucking things up good. Got yourself a fat wife. She's getting taken down a notch.
You know, what's weird is that Rodney Dangerfield has made like 15 movies. You were only thinking of two of them. The other like 12, he just does a very poor man's version of his normal routine.
Well, let's see. I'm thinking like, yeah, that is Caddyshack
and Rodney. Back to School.
They're also a little easy money, Rodney.
A little easy money, yeah. But you're not really thinking of Ladybugs.
What about Wally Sparks?
I've never seen Wally Sparks.
He's kind of like that Wally Sparks. He always shows up and you know, at a rich person's house and messes things up.
Or the fourth tenor. Was that what it was called? Where he's an opera singer?
That one I've never seen. But when I saw Rodney in concert right before he died, he may have actually, looking at this performance, he may have actually died a couple months previous to this, to this show. He had like all the old jokes, but they were like way slow. My uncle wanted me to be in his lap when he died. They gave him the electric chair.
Oh, wow. That's unfortunate.
Yeah.
So you didn't see him at his best.
No. Look, it's still Rodney. It's still funny. You go see him. But, like, you know, in an hour performance, he got about six jokes out.
I had a friend, and she and her father went to go see Henny Youngman. And a whole bunch of other people. And as Henny Youngman is walking down like one of the aisles to exit, he stops and he puts his hand on my friend's dad's shoulder and tells him like a one-liner joke, and then just keeps moving on. Mm-hmm. And he felt like, this is great. Henny Youngman told me a joke, not anyone else, just me personally, just me. But then he looks back and Henny Youngman is telling like the same joke to every single person he passes.
See, I thought maybe Henny Youngman was so senile he thought he was a mic stand. Got very confused about where his mark is.
No, I have another even worse Henny Youngman story. I don't know how
most people don't have one.
I ran into two. Mm-hmm. The other one is that I met someone who was friends or sisters with one of the waitresses at like the Katz's or the Carnegie Deli or one of those real old New York establishments where like the vaudeville guys used to go. And Henny Youngman was still of that era. Mm-hmm. He's someone who I bet we could talk about in the 1917 podcast.
Yeah.
Other than the fact we happen to be talking about him because we pivoted from Rodney Dangerfield.
Yeah.
So the manager of the deli had told Henny Youngman like in 1937 or something, anytime you come here, you eat free, your friends eat free.
Mm-hmm.
Cut to like 60 years later. Henny Youngman comes in at like 9:45 a.m. on a Sunday morning with eight old men. They each order seven entrees. They stay all day. Just complain about the service. Don't pay. Don't leave a tip.
Now, who was alive to like verify any young man's deal at this point? I imagine whoever made the deal was long gone. The ownership probably has changed a few times.
Yeah. Yeah. Was it just like a gentleman's agreement, a handshake that was now costing like, you know, $200,000 worth of whitefish per year?
I picture, the deal was originally made by the old owner, Andrew Carnegie, I'm assuming owned Carnegie Deli.
And Youngman, to his credit, was bringing in old men who he could tell didn't have like that much money.
Like they were like vagrants or
not vagrants, but they were people living on fixed income. So they would order a whole bunch of food and they'd bring most all of it home, and that would be what they ate all week long.
Wow. Would he come in all the time and do this?
He'd come in on a regular basis. And the waitress who worked there would be like, I'm not going to be able to get any decent tips because I'm going to be stuck working for Henny Youngman for free, mm-hmm. like for 7 hours.
What do you be doing, shtick the whole time? And he thought that was like I'm paying you in shtick.
I think so, but like after 14 years, these same one-liner jokes are getting old. They're probably old like 30 minutes in.
Yeah, there's a diner in Midtown that I see Jackie Mason at constantly.
Oh yeah,
yeah, yeah. He's like was the Red Apple Diner or something like that. And he's there all the time. Mm-hmm. And for some reason, he's sitting at the same booth, but he's wearing, like, a tremendous amount of stage makeup. But he's just out and about in New York. It's not like he's, like, not in the middle of a show. You're not catching him, like, on the way to or from the theater. It'll just be, like, a Thursday at 1 o'clock. And he's, you know, like, rouge and everything all painted up.
Is he still dyeing his hair? Does he still
have, like... Yes. Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's a bright red hair?
Yeah.
Okay. He's been doing it for so long, I feel like that's been great-grandfathered in.
It's okay for him?
Or in his case, like great-grandfathered in. At a certain point, you hit that Strom Thurmond level where it's no longer you're not pulling it off. It's like, good for you. The fact that you still exist anymore. Mm-hmm. You can do whatever you want.
You think he does it himself or does he go get it done?
Oh, I bet he does it himself.
Yeah.
Yeah. I bet he doesn't feel comfortable. Then someone would think that he's dyeing his hair.
Yeah. 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 I have to keep the illusion of my youth.
Welcome to 100 Years Ago Today, the 1917 podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Ryan, and joining me as always is Vinny Nardiello.
Ahoy, Jeff.
Ahoy, hoy. That was our third attempt at doing that. I screwed up the first two.
I don't want you to cut it. Do not cut that. Leave it in.
Since I then explained it was the third one, I have to cut the first two out. Otherwise, the joke doesn't work.
You sure?
Yep. Mm, our sponsor this week is...
How much money have you got paid doing comedy?
Our sponsor this week is E.D. McNett, the quality store. War can't stop us. This is a grocery store, dry goods, comestibles. It makes no difference in our appetites for good eats, but the question of the hour is where to get good satisfying eats at medium prices. Medium prices?
That doesn't seem...
No, you would want to say like good eats for cheap or medium prices. At least that's not gilding the lily. They're still saying it's not the cheapest place in town, but it's quality.
Well, no, I think it's maybe it's like some of these people want that little area in the middle. Like, yeah, you know, they don't want to stay at the Motel 6, but they'll stay at, you know, the Ramada.
Yeah,
you know, it's not Marriott, it's not the Hilton.
When you're looking at the Yelp review, you know, sometimes the $2 signs is better than the $1
sign. Yeah.
Yeah, you don't mind spending $14 for an entree. Mm-hmm. Or in this case, take a look at this deal. Special for Saturday, 100 pounds of sugar for $10.
Wow. This is like the Costco of the time, right?
So imagine that you're a regular homeowner in 1917. There's been some shortages because of the war, and you don't quite know, do I have enough flour? Do I have enough sugar? I'd love to go baking and make some cookies. You know what? I'm going to lay in 100 pounds of sugar.
People didn't really have healthy lifestyles back then.
No. So you think 100 pounds of sugar is like a 3-day weekend?
Yeah, that's your family, yeah.
Yeah.
Better stock up in case it snows. I mean, 100 pounds of sugar.
Eat your mayonnaise and sugar, or you don't get any dessert. When I was living with you, we watched something called the Glutton Bowl.
And, oh, yeah, yeah, I remember this.
Yeah, yeah, and one of the contests, it was like a competitive eating contest. And one of the things was eating mayonnaise. And to this day, that is the one thing I've not ever been able to watch. I can watch any sort of horror movie, any sort of gore, grisly stuff, people throwing up. But if I see people eating mayonnaise, like, nope, I'm out. I'm just looking away.
On a sandwich or just like?
No, they had like 2-pound bowls of mayonnaise.
No, I remember that, but yeah. Like. Are you just as grossed out by, like, you know, macaroni salad? For example?
No. No, mayonnaise itself isn't the problem. It's eating like huge quantities of nothing but mayonnaise.
Handfuls of, you know, mayonnaise, like Pooh Bear eating honey.
Exactly, yes. Yes, that is the exact image that I didn't want to have in my head, but now I have in my head.
I remember, yeah, the Glum Bowl was a big deal.
When it came
huge.
On.
It was huge.
Yeah, it was the alien autopsy of that year.
Mm-hmm. Now, I remember people, like, really, like talking about it a lot. And, like, to the point where I seem to recall, like, talk of, is competitive eating going to be the next big thing?
Yeah. And I read a book recently about TV in the, like, 15 years ago. And there was someone who was working for Fox who made all of these outrageous specials.
Oh, like the celebrity boxing and...
Yes, and Would You Marry a Multimillionaire and all that stuff. And the network hated him, but it brought in such good ratings that he could basically do whatever he wanted. So, like at the beginning of October, he could think, I got an idea for, I don't know, how hard can you kick a guy in the balls? And by the end of the month, it would have aired, and it would have gotten, like, a 14 share.
I remember there was one where it was, like different like competitions of some kind, and it was, like, can, like, 50 midgets fight, like, a fat guy? Do you remember that one?
I think I remember ads for something like that.
Yeah.
It was, like, old internet arguments. Like, would you rather fight a Doberman or a Doberman's worth of chihuahuas?
Yeah. But this, yeah, it was like, a fight of,
and
like...
And they did it in real life.
Yeah.
Like a competition like mm-hmm. that. Now I'm wondering who would win.
I don't know. I think, little that guy know that pretty much, like, you know...
So it would be, like, a
all TV would go there.
A 400-pound sumo wrestler versus 400 pounds in weight of little people?
Yeah.
So it would be like 10 against 1.
I don't really think they were fighting. I think they were like racing. I think they were getting a foot race. Which was...
I remember the celebrity boxing with Mindy Bull versus Refrigerator Perry, and the tail of the tape was just absurd. Because one guy is like 7'7" and 230, and the other guy is 6'1" and 455.
Is Refrigerator Perry dead?
I think he might be.
Yeah, he
might
be too.
He was not in good health.
But I'm not sure. There's also a chance he's alive.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's like a Schrodinger's fridge. He is dead and alive until we Google it. All
right. Should we look this up or do you want to... Right, you have dead.
I have dead.
I have that he might be alive. Even though, but at the same time, if he's dead, I'm not surprised.
Yeah, because in that boxing match, which was 15 years ago when he was, you know, at the healthiest he would ever be, he lasted about 30 seconds before... And he was, like, too tired to even sit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, you know, like, most, like, boxers that get the water between rounds, mm-hmm. he was getting insulin, actually. All right. He's alive.
He's alive. I'm sorry, Fridge.
I'm shocked by this.
I apologize.
He's very, very ill all the time. And maybe that's what I was thinking of when I asked if he was dead. No. No, he's in a wheelchair now.
Oh.
Yeah. We need to save him.
I think he has the Super Bowl money. I think he hopefully is doing okay.
He didn't have a really long football career, though.
Oh, that's right. And athletes, I mean, name an athlete and they have 100 friends who were making, like, you know, $300,000 a year, and then within mm-hmm. 6 months of not having a career, they don't have any more money.
Yeah. Should we start like a GoFundMe firm or something?
A fridge fund?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, a rent party for the fridge.
I don't know what we'd be raising money to do for him. Like, we're going to make him walk. We're going to raise enough money that he can now walk. I don't know how that would work, but...
Step one, we just steal his wheelchair.
I don't like this. I feel mean now.
Yeah.
Let's not do this anymore.
Okay, let's move on to our big story of the week. Our big story of the week is colorblindness. This is something I got fascinated by. Because I was looking for special stories for 1917. We've done a bunch of them. There's not a huge amount of stuff going on in September. And I stumble across this and it's like, I have to talk about this. I want to talk about this for an entire half hour. Because colorblindness is really
fascinating. And you will. You will.
And I will.
Yeah.
And hopefully you will help me too. Have you ever read any of the Oliver Sacks books about like how the mind works when something slightly malfunctions?
No.
He did Awakenings.
Okay.
That's the guy that Robin Williams played.
Oh, right.
And he's an English author and scientist. And
he did, like, you know, medicine with humor, right?
No, you're thinking of Patch Adams.
Oh.
No, he's sort of a funny guy, but he was a huge weightlifter. Mm-hmm. They nicknamed him Dr. Squat because he was able to squat something like 650 pounds in Venice Beach.
Just like Robin Williams.
just like Robin Williams. Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you see a picture of him, it's like amazing. Like, wow, that guy is super built. Mm-hmm. So one of the things he talked about was all the different ways that the eye and the brain and the connections between them can malfunction. There are some people who only see in black and white. And there's some people that have various different degrees of color blindness. And there are, like, corrections you can do so that you can start seeing color. Mm-hmm. And I think I remember one person who, like, started to lose her vision but went from color to black and white. Mm-hmm. And she or he was an artist, so they started to make art in black and white. And then color came to the world, and they didn't like it because they got used to the world, the way they were seeing it, with all these crisp blacks and whites and grays. And they didn't like all the extra colors.
Yeah, I would imagine that if you already know, like it's better. Color's better.
Yeah. Yeah, but if you were like the
race... Well, have you ever seen when they do like those monsters in color?
Oh, yes. You know why they're doing that? Because those were the colors they originally used. Mm-hmm. They had really garish day-glow colors on the set because they wanted to have vibrant grays.
Yeah, and then when they did they made movies of the monsters and in color.
Yeah.
And it's awful to look at.
Yeah. There's a whole... I've never thought about how, like, when you see a black and white movie, they needed to paint everything in full color just so that they could then make it in grayscale. Mm-hmm. That they may not be putting the accurate colors in.
Yeah.
They may actually have everything be gray just so that it films better.
Well, I don't like the monsters like that. So I don't know what this artist is thinking.
I've never really watched the Munsters or the Addams Family. I've seen the movies, but I never saw the
I'm Addams more of a Munsters fan than Addams Family.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I would have thought Addams Family.
No. I prefer the Munsters.
You know, sometimes dead is better. My connection between the Munsters and Fred Gwynne and Fred Gwynne's character from Graveyard Shift. Mm-hmm. Or no, from Pet Sematary.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I knew what you meant.
Yeah. And now I'm thinking of Tony Gwynne, the San Diego Padre, because they're both Gwynnes.
Okay. People confuse the two all the time.
So color blindness in various states has been around, you know, since humans were around. It wasn't until John Dalton in 1798... He wrote a paper in a medical journal that officially, like, diagnosed and said some people are not seeing the world the way everyone else is. And it's like one of those psychological experiments, like, dude, when I say CAT, are you thinking the same thing I am? Or are you thinking dog? What if CAT spells dog? You know, dorm room sessions.
Every once in a while, it comes abundantly clear to me that you never smoked marijuana.
That was an almost verbatim quote from Revenge of the Nerds 2, where they were smoking marijuana, so I decided, well, mm-hmm. by proxy, they did. And by double proxy, someone who wrote that movie presumably smoked pot for the experience. Mm-hmm. Thank you for calling that out.
Yeah.
So, up until 1917... everyone in the world was basically stuck, and they weren't quite sure if they were able to see colors or not. And you could look at a flag, and you couldn't, you know, if you saw a blue, blue, and white flag, and everyone said red, white, and blue, you might think, oh, well, this is just two different colors of blue. Mm-hmm. No one can show you a color you can't see.
Yeah.
So that's where the Ishihara color test comes in. There's a Japanese ophthalmologist. His name is Shinobu Ishihara. He was working in Tokyo. Ophthalmologist, by the way, is my favorite word to find misspelled mm-hmm. in the world. Because I have a day job. I work at an ad agency that just does medical stuff. And the word ophthalmologist and ophthalmology shows up. And it's O-P-H-T-H and then ophthalmology. But a lot of people will just say O-P-T-H. They will leave off the first H.
I probably would do that, too.
Yes, and it's incredibly satisfying to find that and fix it, mm-hmm. because you get lots of pats on the back. See, if you misspelled, like, a common word, like surgery, okay, maybe you just mistyped it, or maybe you typed it way wrong and they corrected it to something else. It's not, anyone can see that and say it's wrong, but most people, if they see ophthalmology, won't catch it.
Won't spell check catch this?
Spell check will catch it, but they flag so many big words that it's almost not helpful.
Yeah.
And spell check.
Or do you not want to alert people that there is spell check because they're out of a job?
Yeah, the robots take my job away. Luckily, spell check doesn't work for the layout programs.
Oh, good.
And that's where most of the editing is done, at a point where you can't spell check it unless you physically copy the text and put it back into a Microsoft Word document, which is a trick that works. But for every big word like ophthalmology that I do find and correct, a little one like surgery may go by me because I'll just assume that it's spelled right.
Mm-hmm.
And it's in a small font and you don't want to get that close. And then we have a misspelling and I need to explain how I don't know how to spell a word that you learned how to spell in fourth grade. And that's my job.
Okay. That's a fascinating look at your world. It really was. I like that.
So, back to Shinobu Ishihara. He was trying to get the best Japanese soldiers he could. So,
spell catheter.
C-A-T-H-E-T-E-R.
Okay, good. All right, come on.
How about sphygmomanometer?
That's not my job.
That's a fancy name for a blood pressure cuff.
Oh.
So, Ishihara was trying to find a way of screening the best Japanese soldiers to make sure that they all had the, you know, great vision. He didn't want to train someone, put them in the field, and then find out that they had, like, I don't know, a lazy eye, strabismus or something, and they weren't able to use their rifle. Mm-hmm. So he came up with a test called the Ishihara color test, and it is still used nowadays. Now, because they're in Japan, they use the hiragana symbols. Oh, I got that right. Wow. I wanted to double check to make sure I said the word right. And I was assuming I was going to get it wrong somehow.
See, you said that perfectly. Last show, you're struggling with Burgess Meredith.
Well, you know, it's sometimes difficult.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they used hiragana symbols, but the modern test will use whatever your local language is. But the test is basically the same. And would you like to do the test?
Sure.
Okay, we got the test right here. Now, obviously, since this is a visual podcast, you will be able to see exactly what we're seeing at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
But you can go to colorvisiontesting.com/Ishihara and you'll be able to test it.
Turn your car, put this up on your phone right now while you're driving, and okay.
Okay, so this is the first test. This is the demonstration plate. I am looking at a number 16 in yellow against a blue, green background. Are you looking at the same
thing? I am
thing?
Too, but how do you know I'm not going to lie and just copy your answer?
Ah, if you're officially administering the test, you only have 3 seconds to answer.
All right.
So,
well, who's administering, who's taking the test? Or are we both taking it?
I think we're both taking it.
All right, 16.
Okay. So, this is a demonstration plate. No matter what sort of eye weirdness you have, you are going to be able to see the 16. There's no such thing as yellow-green color blindness.
Oh.
So, everyone in the world can see this. So, if you were going to fake it, this is not where you would fake it.
Okay. 16 again.
Yep, another 16. This one.
That's a number 2.
3 seconds went by. Oh, yeah, I kind of see a number 2, but it's very blurry. The tests, by the way, are just spheres.
Mm-hmm.
They're just lots of circles, some of them bigger, some of them smaller, and in lots of different muted colors.
By the way, I got that quicker than 3 seconds.
Yeah, well, it's not like a race to get it before the 3 seconds are up.
Oh.
It's just that you're not supposed to think about it.
Oh, well, I saw it. Number 2. I got it.
Yeah, you got number 2.
5.
5.
5 again.
5.
42.
42.
7.
7.
29.
28.
That's 29. That's 29.
29. Yeah.
You're more colorblind than me. Yeah. 6.
8 again?
It's 6.
I don't want to say the same thing you do.
So are you intentionally guessing wrong?
No, I'm intentionally thinking that maybe it's a trick question, and maybe it's just a weird font.
Mm-hmm. 57. That's the Heinz 57, isn't it?
It looks like it, yeah. Oh, you should have seen a 57 on this test plate. Color deficient individuals may see a 35 or nothing. And now that I'm looking, there's this kind of spinach green background, and there's sort of like an emerald green weaving in behind the 57. So I guess if you can't see the emerald Or no, if you can see the emerald green, but you can't see the red.
You see the 35.
Yeah, you see the 35 instead.
Are you now? Are you more colorblind than me in this movie?
No. No, I think I'm just trying harder. Oh. Even though I know what you're supposed to do is just, like, look and first thought.
I'm taking this properly. I'm taking it the way Dr. Shikara would have wanted us to take it.
Okay, fair enough. Ten. I said it first. That way I have better vision. Color deficient individuals may see nothing instead of seeing the 10.
Well, you and I both wear glasses. Who do you think has worse vision?
My vision is getting worse. Just in the last 6 months or year, I realize if I'm reading a book in bed, it is advantageous to me to take my glasses off and just hold it closer.
I take my glasses off to read also.
Okay. How long have you been doing that?
It's pretty recent. My glasses are always dirty.
Oh.
So I see, you know, I can see up close. I can read without glasses.
Yeah, me too.
I don't even hold it close. I can just read without glasses. I can't see anything too far. Like, all right, I just took my glasses off right now. You're blurry to me.
Okay.
And you were about 5 feet away.
5 feet away.
Yeah.
Let's see. If I take my glasses off, you are a little bit blurry. I can still read South Park on your t-shirt, but okay. I can't identify any of the characters.
We're time traveling to 1998. That's why we're wearing your shirt.
Yes.
You took your glasses off and time traveled.
Yeah, we're wearing our cool guy shirts from 18 years ago. AKA the shirts we bought 18 years ago and have yet to have our wives throw out. I've still held on to one Spider-Man shirt, and I've had it since 1996. I think it's the oldest piece of clothing I own.
The oldest thing I own is a Hot Rod Roddy Piper shirt.
I saw a guy with one just yesterday walking into the laundromat down the street from me, and he was a prime candidate for, yeah, that looks like a sort of guy whose afternoon is hanging out in the laundromat even though he's not doing laundry. Tucked into seersucker trousers. Seersucker trousers are about three sizes too big for him. Mm-hmm. He's one of those skinny guys who stole his gut.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's wearing his Roddy Piper shirt.
Yeah. He spent about 45 seconds looking into the laundromat before walking in because, you know, his whole day is just standing in the laundromat. You don't want to rush walking in. You want to take your time and enjoy it.
There's nothing, when you go to a laundromat, and I have a washer dryer now, so I don't have that feeling. But there is always that weird feeling when you realize that you're just as poor as the people in there. Like, you're doing laundry, and you're like, oh, man, I guess I'm at the same economic level as everybody else here. That's awful.
I like it. It's a leveling point. We had a problem with our dryer, and I eventually fixed it. You do get electrocuted when you use a dryer, but it's very light, very almost no electrocution. It's not even worth mentioning how little electrocuted I get whenever I do laundry. But before I fixed it totally and completely, save for the electrocution, I would have to take the wet laundry and bring it down to the laundromat to dry it.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a bunch of quarters, and I would sit there and read, and there'd be one or two people hanging out. And it wasn't like the cool laundromat that you see in movies or TV shows.
Yeah.
It was just like the sad one with a single mom. And like, yep, her and me and this old man, I don't want to ask him what he's doing with his life.
Yeah, there's someone who's just crying in there, you know. You know, someone else. He's always like the guy with like an airbrush shirt of his dead cousin.
I found out that there's someone in this neighborhood who has very good taste in books because there's a whole library of books in the laundromat. Mm-hmm. And they're all in Spanish. And like half of them are Carl Sagan books.
Mm-hmm.
So there is someone on this street who is a Spanish-speaking science nerd.
Yeah.
So props to him or her.
Mm-hmm. Yes, like, you know, I have a lot to talk about. You can, like, you know, because you're a science nerd.
Yes, I am. Yeah.
So. Do you speak any Spanish?
No. But I have a lot of those books. So maybe I could teach myself Spanish if I stole it from the library.
Mm-hmm. So I'm picturing the two of you just, like, reading each other these books in your native tongues while We Are the World plays over the laundromat speaker.
You know, Cindy has, my wife, has a collection of Harry Potter books from around the world.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever we go to another country, she gets the Harry Potter first book in the native language there.
Mm-hmm.
So we have it in Spanish, French, and I think we even have it in Latin. Because when we went to England, they were selling it in Latin.
Why would they have Harry Potter in Latin?
Someone decided as like their grad school project that they were going to translate it.
I feel like only like you know for bishops. For bishops can read this.
bishops and people who refuse to accept that Vatican II happened. I have a friend, Ed, who is red-green colorblind, and he didn't know he was red-green colorblind until, like, well into his childhood. Mm-hmm. And he's an artist. He does, like, software development. But he didn't realize because, like, you wouldn't think it's wrong. Because it matches up with everything you see in your whole life, every sort of example.
Mm-hmm.
I still don't know if you're red-green colorblind. Does red look green, or does green look red, or do they both look kind of brown?
I don't know. We should put a colorblind person in on this to talk to them.
Maybe you're dead. I was kind of hoping that we would discover that you were colorblind.
Let's bring up... Can we interview your cat?
Oh, yeah, because cats can't see in color.
Yeah.
Yeah, good point.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think my cat would be interested, although she was drinking my water before.
That's disgusting.
Yeah. My cat's greatest joy in life is finding someone who has a glass of water and then leaning over and drinking water from their glass.
Will you drink out, like, after she's drinking the glass, is that water dead to you, or do you?
No, at this point, I don't care. It's fine. I have an iron stomach. It's not like I'm going to get sick from a little bit of cat mucus.
So people eating mayonnaise is revolting, but that's not.
Right. If I was eating that much mayonnaise, I'd probably be fine. I just don't want to see other people.
What about a cat eating mayonnaise?
Ooh. I think you just gave me something to be scared of. Everyone else is watching it and being scared of clowns. I'm going to be scared of
hocking up a big mayonnaise coated hairball.
Oh.
Right into your lap there, Jeff.
Okay, moving on. Moving on. Our Nickelodeon this week, you have two choices, and they're both going to connect to our quiz. You can watch the documentary Imelda about Imelda Marcos, or you can watch the World War II movie The Great Raid, which was about a bunch of American and Filipino forces in World War II joining together to have a huge prison raid in, I think, Luzon, Philippines.
Mm-hmm.
And that is all to tie into the fact that 100 years ago this week... Ferdinand Marcos was born.
Uh-huh.
He was a name that we heard
a lot when we were kids, yeah.
A lot.
Yeah, he's the kind of guy that was definitely the subject of a Mad Magazine folding or two in his day.
Yes. Yeah, and I always felt like I was coming into the story late. Like, everyone else knew a lot more about him mm-hmm. than I did. And I didn't really want to know that much about him. Because the way I understood it, there were about 200 countries in the world. And he was the ruler of one of them. And adults... presumably knew the names of the other 199,
mm-hmm.
and they were all just as fascinating, but we kept on talking about this one for some reason.
Mainly, I seem to know more about his wife's shoes than anything about him.
Yes, and I found out why, because he had to flee the country in 1986, and it wasn't just like, I'm going to get on a plane and leave. He somehow convinced the Americans to bring him to America and bring his wife and send a couple of cargo planes for what, like, his living requirements. So he basically took two planes full of treasure from the Philippine people and just threw it on a plane and took it with him. And
where did he settle in the United States? Where did they let him set up camp?
This is where I'm now going to mix him and Manuel Noriega up. Because I don't know where he was.
I confuse those two all the time, too.
Yes. I'm sorry, Manuel Noriega fans. I've mixed him up with the peanut butter of Ferdinand Marcos. But Imelda Marcos, who's famous for having a giant shoe collection, mm-hmm. she couldn't bring all of her shoes. I think she brought like 1,000 shoes with her.
Yeah.
But the rest were left behind at the mansion.
Mm-hmm.
The Philippine version of the White House. So when they stormed it, they found over 2,700 pairs of shoes that she left behind.
Yes. So that didn't fit onto the cargo plane.
Right. And that was like the example of the waste and the opulence and the luxury and the kleptocracy of the Marcos family.
Mm-hmm.
But that was just like one instance of it. Growing up, we didn't get that. All we got was there's this lady who has a whole bunch of shoes.
Yes.
We didn't get, well, she also has a whole bunch of everything else. They're just mm-hmm. using the shoes to talk about, yeah. Well, she has this many outfits.
Yeah, I don't even think I understood the idea that they were taking this from their people to buy shoes.
Right. I definitely didn't get that.
Yeah.
And at most, I would think it would, like, she would go into a, like, like a town and say, I want all your shoes. Mm-hmm. Give me all your shoes. I'm a dragon, except I collect shoes and sit on a pile of them. So, our quiz, I'm going to try to talk about Ferdinand Marcos while asking some questions.
Okay.
Okay. Ferdinand Marcos falsely claimed to fight alongside the American forces during what World War II atrocity?
I don't know.
The Bataan Death March.
Yeah, that's what I fear it was. But, yeah. You know.
Yeah, it could have been the bridge on the River Kwai also, but that's also in Asia. But mm-hmm. I think that was either Thailand or it wasn't Vietnam. I forget which one of the Southeast Asian countries that is. But he made some massive claims about what he did during the Bataan Death March. I mean, he wasn't saying anything bad. He was saying, you know, wonderful things. That he led a 9,000-man raid against the Japanese army, and he did not do that. He then said that he got a medal from Douglas MacArthur, who personally put it on his chest, and he did not do that. I don't think he even served in the military, but later on, he would become president by boasting about his service in World War II.
You think, like, if you're lying, just say that you served, because that's easy enough to, like, blend in, you know?
Yeah. I think that's where the whole big lie theory comes in. If you're going to go out on a limb for something, don't go out on a limb for, like, I once did something nice. Go out on a limb with, I am the greatest person mm-hmm. who has ever walked the earth.
So you should have been like I am Douglas MacArthur.
Yes, because there's going to be a set number of people who are going to believe you no matter what. Mm-hmm. And if you get them to believe this huge thing, it helps to then believe all the other little things afterwards. Speaking of which, what did Ferdinand Marcos do before he became a politician? Was he a banker, a soldier, a lawyer, or a journalist?
All right, let's see. Lawyer.
Lawyer, yes. I tried to make that hard for you, but a lawyer just stands out as mm-hmm. what this sort of person would be doing. So, he was a lawyer. He got elected to the Philippine House. Then he got elected to the Senate. Then he became president in 1965. Then he got elected to a second term in 1969. As this all is according to schedule, none of this seems too terribly bad. I'm sure he did some bad things to get noticed and get elected and reelected, but this is all like standard politics. Mm-hmm. And the economy for the Philippines is growing. But then in 1972, well, in like the 70s, things start to fall apart. What did he declare in 1972 in the Philippines?
Martial law.
Martial law, correct.
If somebody's declaring things, it's either bankruptcy or martial law. Or I guess independence.
Or it's Southern ladies who just...
I do declare.
Yes, they don't declare anything. They just declare that they are declaring something. So there were riots all throughout the Philippines. There were communist protests. The military disliked him and were thinking about having a coup to overthrow him. And he used that to build up his own case by saying, there's so much stuff going on, we need to institute martial law. Oh, and by the way, in martial law, I get to keep on being president because it's too unsafe to hold elections. Mm-hmm. And until I say that it's safe, there are no more elections and I'll just be here forever.
Mm-hmm. Like America 2020, kind of.
Yes, there are parallels. So martial law allowed him to stay on beyond the two terms. He put martial law to a vote, and it got 90% approval. That's just a little fishy.
Mm-hmm.
When you get 90% approval of anything on a vote, that it's there's something wrong with that. He then had a vote to change the constitution. And by changing the constitution, got rid of the whole two terms and out thing. And that got 95% approval. And then he then switched over from president to prime minister. But
really, again, not even making a realistic lie.
No. No. The big lie is mm-hmm. the thing. If he could have gotten 102% approval, he would have gone with that. And he would have said, you know, ghosts like me so much that they came back to vote for me. So that's basically when he became a dictator. He didn't officially say, I'd like to change my title to dictator. But other people were letting the rest of the world know that he was a dictator. So just like Deng Xiaoping had the Great Leap Forward in China, Marcos had his own movement that was supposed to spur the slagging economy of the Philippines, but ended up destroying it. What did he call his? Did he call it the New Society? Did he call it the New World Order? Did he call it D-Generation X? Or did he call it the Heart Foundation? Some of those may be wrestling terms.
I think most of them might be, actually.
The one that's not a wrestling term is New Society.
Yes.
Yeah. So Ferdinand and Imelda Marcos were accused of running this sort of dictatorship, where she held no office, but she could do whatever she wanted, and served as an ex facto diplomat.
I don't know. What would you call
I had never heard this before. Yeah. A conjugal dictatorship.
I never heard that. No. You made that up. No, Wikipedia made it up.
There is a book written called The Conjugal Dictatorship about the Marcoses, and then the person who wrote it was, I think, beaten and then thrown from a helicopter.
Mm-hmm. By 95% of the population, actually.
Yes.
Ganged up on him.
And then, like all of, like, everyone he went in a fraternity with started to show up dead also. There are all sorts of mysterious deaths, which is one of the many reasons why Ferdinand Marcos was not a very nice guy. Imelda Marcos, by the way, still alive.
So all these people were brutally killed, and we kind of reduced it to Johnny Carson making fun of her shoes.
Yeah. That was the comedy takeaway. Because I guess you can't make fun of that sort of death and that level of dictatorship. But you can find the one little example. I'm trying to think of another version nowadays. Like, the 9/11 anniversary just happened.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're on the hook to make something funny about 9/11. But I can't really do
that. I'm not into that. But I noticed a lot more people doing it this year than previous years.
Yeah. One way people try to make fun of it is by making fun of the people who had, like, unusual or tacky or off-key celebrations of 9/11, mm-hmm. and memorials.
All right, I got to show you this in that case.
Okay.
All right, hold on. This is sort of on topic. My daughter's in gymnastics. Not cheerleading, gymnastics.
Mm-hmm.
And they gave this out to the kids.
Oh, no.
It's... a bear, a cartoon, it's a coloring page, it's a cartoon bear.
It's a cartoon bear holding another cartoon bear
doing a
handstand, and underneath it...
But now, hold on, one cartoon bear is dressed like in military fatigues, and yes. The other one's in a leotard. So he's holding her up.
So it's like the military helping gymnasts.
And it says, "United we handstand. Remember September 11th. But the whole thing, it looks like Abu Ghraib a little bit, doesn't it? Like
that, I saw a number of bad taste 9/11 memorials. That may take the cake.
Yeah.
That's the one I think that's the farthest away from good idea. Or someone thought this was a good idea.
Yeah, and by the way, when they give out these things in a gymnastics school, don't start laughing like a maniac. At this. It just draws stares from other parents.
That concludes this week of the 100 Years Ago Today, the 1917 podcast. Join us next week when we talk about Honus Wagner.
All right.
I was going to say the Yankee skipper. Join us next week when we talk about Honus Wagner, the Flying Dutchman.